How to Read and Understand the Biblical Prophets by Peter J. Gentry. Crossway, 2017, 145 pages. A brief book summary from Books at a Glance by Kirsten Burkett. About the author. Peter J. Gentry, PhD, University of Toronto, is professor of Old Testament interpretation at the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and director of the Hexapla Institute. He is co-author with Stephen Wellam of Kingdom Through Covenant, A Biblical Theological Understanding of the Covenants, Crossway, 2012. Contents. Introduction. 1. Calling the people back to the covenant. 2. The end of the covenant, judgment, and restoration. 3. The function of repetition in Hebrew literature. 4. The purpose of the oracles concerning the foreign nations. 5. Describing the future, Part 1, Typology and the New Exodus. 6. Describing the future, Part 2, Apocalyptic Language. 7. Describing the future, Part 3, The Already and the Not Yet. Conclusion. General summary. Responsible Bible reading strategies for the prophets in the context of unfolding salvation and covenant. Introduction. Many people who read the Bible do not have proper reading strategies, reading Gospels, narratives, and prophecy as they read Romans, then defending this by calling it literal interpretation. We read newspapers more intelligently. Prophecy is especially hard as the prophets use many genres to communicate, but there are principles that apply to all prophetic literature. This book does not push any particular eschatology, but helps believers to read the prophets. Chapter 1. Calling the People Back to the Covenant. Everything in the prophets is based upon the covenant between God and Israel delivered in Deuteronomy. Israel constantly flagged in her loyalty to Yahweh. Consider how to read Isaiah chapters 5 through 6 in this light. Isaiah uses a recursive pattern in which a Hebrew author takes up the same topic repeatedly from different points of view. There is a central theme for Isaiah of corruption and social injustice, resulting in divine judgment. It ends with the vision of a renewed Zion. Isaiah chapters 1 through 2, Jerusalem's idolatrous worldview, leads to judgment. Then God will restore. Isaiah chapters 3 through 4, Jerusalem indicted for social injustice. Then, vision of future Zion and new Exodus. Isaiah chapters 5 through 12. Same themes in the context of military and political crisis in Judah. In chapter 5, the message is given in the form of a parable applied to Judah and Jerusalem. Then, the coming judgment is described. Key words are woe and therefore. Six woes leading to judgment. At the heart is the violation of social justice as indicated by the word pair justice-righteousness. In Isaiah, the broken covenant will be restored by a future king who will rule in justice and righteousness. The promise of chapter 6, verse 5 is based in Deuteronomy chapter 17. The king embodies Torah, summarized as justice-righteousness. Torah is instruction, not just law, and is given in the form of a covenant. It is instruction for living in this relationship of faithfulness, loyalty, love, trust, and obedience. The violation of social justice is at the heart of all six woes in Isaiah chapter 5. In particular, ownership of property has broken down due to the monarchy and urbanization, leaving land ownership concentrated in the hands of the rich, which violated the social justice of the Torah. The people are called back to the covenant relationship and to start treating people more humanely. Otherwise, they face destruction. This demonstrates that prophecy is mostly not about predicting the future. It is mostly about how God's word applies to the present. The expectation of judgment for disloyalty comes from Deuteronomy. Chapter 2. The End of the Covenant, Judgment, and Restoration. Why were the prophets before the major ones, such as Elijah, not recorded in writing? And why are there astounding future predictions in the prophets? 1. Prediction distinguishes Yahweh from false idols. For example, Isaiah chapters 40 through 48. Prediction also validates the prophet. Deuteronomy chapter 18 verses 14 through 22, a true prophet speaks in the name of Yahweh, and what he predicts comes true. So writing down the prediction is important. When the prediction is given about events in the near future, their truth gives credence to the prediction of the far future. For example, Isaiah's prediction of exile in Babylon, release, and rebuilding the temple. 2. Prediction of the future is necessary to explain the exile. It was not because Yahweh was weak. Isaiah chapter 36 verses 16 through 20, chapter 37 verses 1 through 13. Prediction proves it was because of their violation of the covenant. Again, this meant the prediction had to be written down. 3. Prediction of the future demonstrates that deliverance takes time. It would not happen in Isaiah's lifetime. 4. Prediction of the future demonstrates Yahweh's sovereignty over the nations. 5. Prediction of the future proves Yahweh is trustworthy. So there are many reasons why prophets predicted the future, which meant their prophecy had to be written down. Chapter 3. The function of repetition in Hebrew literature. Hebrew writers were repetitive, unlike our more linear method of writing. For example, Exodus chapter 19, verses 5 through 6. Poetry. Almost all based on the couplet, occasionally triplets. Frequently, both lines say the same thing, but together they create a greater idea. For example, Isaiah chapter 5, verse 17. Word pairs. Commonly, two words are joined to create a greater concept. For example, kindness, faithfulness. Genesis chapter 47, verses 29 through 30. Chiasm. Sentences, paragraphs, or larger sections of text are arranged ABC, CBA. For example, Isaiah chapter 6, verse 10. Isaiah chapter 33, verses 13 through 24. The two halves together create the whole meaning. The text is not linear. If we grasp the character and nature of Hebrew literature, we can deal with difficult passages in the text as well as clarify the literary structure of the text as a whole. This makes sense of the literary unity of Isaiah in seven sections. A difficult passage in one section can be understood by looking at a parallel in another. For example, Isaiah chapter 34 verses 5 and 6 is understood by Isaiah chapter 24 verses 21 through 22 and 32 verses 14 through 16, which summarizes chapter 11 verses 1 through 9. Many aspects of the text can be opened up and properly understood once we grasp the manner in which these authors of the distant past communicate. The end of each of these seven sections of Isaiah describe the renewed Zion. The repetition means all seven together are necessary to understand what Isaiah is communicating. Chapter 4. The purpose of the oracles concerning the foreign nations. Why are there so many oracles about nations that are not relevant to us today? This is explained in Deuteronomy in the Song of Moses. Here, past history is recalled and the future history of Israel spelled out. The future of the nations as connected, as would be expected from Genesis chapter 12 verses 1 through 3. Israel is going to break the covenant with idols and social injustice. In the song, Yahweh promises judgment. But in stanza 5, Yahweh swears he will punish the nations for idolatry and rescue Israel. The song shows the Abrahamic covenant will be fulfilled by using Israel to bring deliverance and salvation to the rest of the world. Isaiah chapters 13 through 27. Here, 15 oracles are in three groups of five. The first five oracles, Babylon chapter 13 verse 1 through 14 verse 27, Philistia, chapter 14, verses 28 through 32, Moab, chapter 15, verse 1 through chapter 16, verse 14, superpowers, chapter 17, verse 1 through chapter 18, verse 7, Egypt, chapter 19, verse 1 through chapter 20, verse 6, shows that God is sovereign and will hold the nations accountable for worshiping creation rather than the Creator. Deliverance is through Israel and her coming king. Overall, Isaiah predicts that the renewal and restoration of Zion will involve taking Israel's worst enemies and incorporating them into the one people of God, giving names to Assyria and Egypt that were once used only of Israel. Chapter 5, Describing the Future, Part 1, Typology and the New Exodus. Prophets had access to the heavenly court, God surrounded by his host. The prophet hears and sees the divine decisions that concern the governing of particular individuals, nations, or situations, and then reports them with the near and distant future. For example, Isaiah chapter 7, verse 1 through chapter 11, verse 6. Prophets often place the near and far future together so that when the near predictions came true, confidence is placed in the far ones. Description of the future can be made in literal plain speech, apocalyptic language, or typology. First, we will discuss typology. Types are, for example, when Exodus becomes a model or pattern to describe future deliverance and salvation for the people of God. See this worked out in Isaiah. 1. God promised descendants and land to the fathers. Genesis chapters 12, 15, 17, 22. Promises repeated in Isaiah in reference to the return of the exiles from Babylon. Isaiah chapter 49, verses 19 through 21, chapter 54, verses 1 through 3. 2. Deliverance from Egypt language is used by Isaiah to describe rescue of Israel from exile. Isaiah chapter 40, verse 10, chapter 48, verse 14, chapter 51, verses 5 and 9, chapter 52, verse 12, chapter 42, verse 13, chapter 53, verse 1. 3. Journey through the desert. In Isaiah, there will be a call to prepare the way of the Lord in the desert. Isaiah chapter 40, verses 3 through 5. Also food imagery. Isaiah chapter 41, verses 17 through 20, chapter 43, verses 19 through 21, chapter 48, verse 21, chapter 49, verse 10. Entrance into the Promised Land. Isaiah chapter 49, verses 8 through 11. Ezekiel and Jeremiah and others also use images and language from the Exodus to describe the coming king and his victory and the spiritual rescue from slavery to sin. The type is not just a pattern of future salvation. The antitype is always bigger and better. Why did the prophets use the Exodus as a type of future salvation? Exodus chapter 15 shows that it was a model of future salvation from the beginning. The crossing of the Red Sea was a pattern of how God would bring them through the desert to Canaan. Isaiah and other prophets understood this. Principles of typology. 1. Correspondence between events, people, places, etc. of one time and those of a later time. 2. Escalation from type to antitype. 3. Biblical warrant must be present. There must be exegetical evidence that the type is intended to be a pattern. 4. Controlled by the progression of covenants. Chapter 6, Describing the Future, Part 2, Apocalyptic Language. A prophet predicting the next 6 months could do so in plain speech, for the names of places and leaders would likely remain unchanged. For 200 years ahead, names, maps, and cultures would be very different, so would need to use metaphors, symbolic language, and typology, especially if the important thing is relationship with God. For something thousands of years ahead, metaphors and symbols become even more important. For example, Isaiah chapters 13 through 27 events further away in time become more like parables. Furthest away may use many metaphors and symbols. Apocalyptic literature, such as in Daniel or Zechariah, is characterized by narrative framework, events told as a story, schematization of history, given by heavenly messengers, God's eye view of history, colorful metaphors and symbols, future hope in present trouble. The colorful imagery means that events can be given layers of meaning. If you want to write of a future rescue, metaphors of Exodus would come to mind. And since God is creator, metaphors from creation too. For example, Jeremiah chapter 4, verses 23 through 26, reverses stages of creation. Isaiah chapter 13, verses 9 through 11, also uses creation images. In apocalyptic passages, it is also crucial to understand the literary structure. Daniel, for example, has two parts, stories and visions. The two are inextricably linked chronologically, linguistically, and structurally. The stories establish Daniel's credentials, so we trust his visions. Also, stories emphasize dominion and authority, key themes in the visions. We need to know the whole to understand the parts. Then, we have to have a roadmap to see what the visions relate to. Chapter 7, Describing the Future, Part 3, The Already and the Not Yet. The Bible is God's Word, a unity, so it is not surprising that books have connections. New Testament citations of prophets also helps us understand them. We learn that fulfillment of Old Testament prophecy is already and not yet. For example, Luke chapter 4, verses 16 through 21 quotes Isaiah chapter 61, verses 1 through 3, but stops before Day of Judgment. That part is not yet. Isaiah did not know this. Jesus comes twice, but Isaiah saw them as one, grace and judgment together. For example, Zechariah chapter 12, verse 10 is fulfilled in two stages, in John chapter 19, verses 34 through 37, and Revelation chapter 1, verse 7. The kingdom is inaugurated, but not consummated. Prophets did not see this, therefore we cannot construct chronology from Old Testament prophecy. Conclusion. Eschatological debates have gone forward without knowing all the rules used by the biblical prophets for communication. Debate between literal and spiritual interpretation is misguided. We need to understand the rules of the genre to know what literal means. Copyright 2024, Books at a Glance. Books at a Glance book summaries are available by subscription only, and except for brief quotes, may not be reproduced in whole or in part without express written permission.